Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Poulton Civilization Site. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts,
Nigel
Mitos.
I can't even
now that we've got the geekiness out, now we've got recording for posterity.
You might have given us the episode title, Recording for Posterity.
Oh, great.
You're listening to episode 56 of Polycast, an official podcast of the Apollon Civilization site. I'm Matt G, known as Nugog on the forums, and I'm joined by Dan Q.
That's me still.
Imran Siddiqui.
Also known as the anti-anti-Imran.
Matt Lua.
Space Cadet Extraordinaire.
And Mathos.
Just Mathos.
He's from CFC.
I don't have a fancy title like you guys do.
Matt, why don't you tell us where you are right now?
I'm in my office at, I'm in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. What's funny about that?
And what time is it right now?
3:01 in the morning.
To be on this show, Matt is not only up at a ridiculous hour in the morning, but he's at work.
Wow.
Mathos is here. Poor Anna Lee is not feeling very well. Mathos made the mistake of being online on Skype and answering my message. And,
And he's been a co-host before. He should know better by now.
Yeah, really?
I was actually in bed, and my wife's like, hey, do you know a Dan Q? I'm like, yeah, why? Guess what? He's talking to you.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Like, oh, okay.
Civilization for colonization. With the coolest king, so far, it's a pretty close race. Although, you know, when you only have 16 votes, I'm not really sure how exciting that is. But anyway, the described mad English king and the addicted Dutch king are tied at 4 votes apiece, followed by a two-way second place between the gloomy Spanish king and being blind. And the puffy French king is currently in last place. This thread started by Apenpap.
But, you know, actually, we're not talking about the coolest-looking king. We're talking about the callest-looking king, if you look at the title of the thread.
It's because people can't spell.
Well, this is Sif for call. Maybe it was an intended pun. Did you ever think about it?
Well, he changed it for the thread, so...
So what's the coolest-looking king?
Kind of like the Spanish king.
All right, so that's one vote on this Polycast panel for English, one for Spanish.
I probably would like Carlos, too, just because he's different.
2 votes for the Spanish. Oh, no.
I'll vote for the Dutch king.
Oh.
I think I just like taking off the English king. Because he's always doing his little pinky ring out in front. And I'm like, F you.
All right, so there was 2 votes for the English, 2 for the Spanish, and 1 for the Dutch. So on this Polycast panel, no king wins. Over in the coolest-looking leader poll, Jose de San Martin is just edging Louis de Frontenac, 5 votes to 4. Followed by Simon Bolivar at 2, and George Washington at 1.
I actually tend to like Samuel de Champlain, who's got none.
1 vote for de Champlain.
I voted for the Spanish guy, even though I thought I was on the other one.
Whoops.
Oh, well.
I will cast my vote for Bolivar.
Bolivar!
I haven't seen some of them yet. Honestly, he's picking like the same 3 ones, and I'm like, stop it. Bandwagon, Bolivar.
All right, I'll vote for Jose de San Martin.
Oh, so that means on this Polycast panel, de San Martin ties Bolivar by accident because Mathos doesn't know how to click properly.
In the Senate, we discuss which constitutional freedom in Civ 4 Call is most important to you.
In Forum Talk, unique bonuses for religions, newly conquered areas, do you rework tiles, financial crisis, and workers in a pack or alone. In the Vault, from episode 52 with Dan Q, Makalua, Imran Siddiqui, Cardamandua, Impaler WRG, and Joe B. Reeves, and Lee and Joe discuss their Civilization Revolution gameplay experiences.
And in the mailbag, we talked about the idea of having more than a technology to found a religion.
Also, in the vault, Stories from the Theater. One from Dan Q in episode 46, and then from episode 54, Pimpy McPimp and Dan Q again. That's me.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Now, let's see. In Colcast, the Senate, we're talking about colonization and which constitutional freedom is the most important to you. Started by Zalgo.
So far in this poll of just over 40 votes, all men are free, which is plus 2 population per settlement, is dominating, followed by the right to bear arms, although little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
B-A-R-E, don't have to wear a suit to work. That is polycast-worthy.
Not necessarily a good thing.
Well, no, polycast-worthy would have been right to bear arms with, like, watch out for the grizzly. We're not witty enough to have don't wear a suit to work.
Well, I would tell you, except I haven't gotten a game of Colonization 2 at that point. So.
Never played the game. Is it worth it?
I like it, but I like the original game, so it's just me having a shiny update of the original, so I like it because of that. I don't know that somebody who never played it before necessarily would get into it as easily.
Crandon in this thread said, all men are free is the best, obviously. Plus 2 population means 2 soldiers per town. All men are free! He drafted into my army.
I guess all men aren't really free then.
Yes. Bessa Phalus goes so far as to say, anyone who doesn't understand all men are free doesn't understand how to play the game. Whoa, hey now. Onion Soldier says, just a sec, not true. Depending upon your colonies and strategies, certain rights might be more useful.
Yeah, as fast as I've seen the Founding Fathers get snapped up in the early part of the game, I don't think elections would be as useful as people seem to think at that point. Although being able to still trade with Europe might not be bad. At least in the original game, that was a good idea.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
This topic here by Sovereign basically takes each religion and kind of adjusts the religion based on what he feels the religion deserves. Like, he has Jewish temple gains plus 1 gold with finances.
I love it. Stereotypes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Stereotypes is usually not good.
Unique bonuses for religions?
The Christians get more experience because they're always warring on everybody else.
One guy mentioned that the Christians should get plus 1 hammers because Jesus was a carpenter. The one that I just don't understand is the Islam one. Plus 1 science speakers. Now, I know this is going by the good scientists back during the Middle Ages, but right now they're like so far behind technologically that it's kind of just doesn't make sense. Would I offend you all?
No, I think awkward silence agreed with you there.
Confucianism, minus 10 maintenance, it's good with laws and reform. What the hell?
Minus 10 maintenance, because we're all just all mellowed out by the Confucianism.
And they're good with laws and reform. And Buddhist is plus 1 happy face because you have karma and seeking enlightenment.
Aren't Buddhists, like, not happy? I don't know where to put that. Well, they're very calm. So what do they get a happy face for?
Plus 1 health for Taoist, commune with nature and the environment.
What?
Sovereign says he wanted to make each religion unique instead of all of them being practically the same. I mean, as it stands, there's no difference between the 7 religions except their name, icon, and tech needed to discover them. In other words, in Civ 4, Christianity is just a palette swap of, say, Taoism or Buddhism. Well, that's true. But I think we've discussed before in passing that whether or not you have stereotypes associated with these or not, let's say the post had actually said Christian temple plus 1 gold, would we still be as skittish about doing this?
Yes. Wait. Was that a real question, Dad? Duh? What?
Yes, it was a real question. Was that a real answer?
No.
It could be interesting from a gameplay point of view to have the religions having different benefits that would sort of make them, I suppose, a bit more worthwhile rather than trying to get the first ones first. But from a marketing point of view, there's no way it would ever happen.
Yes, with regard specifically to the Jewish temple, Lord of the Marks is a good example of why Firaxis didn't touch this.
Yeah, I agree there.
I mean, I guess you could have done random.
Well, then if that's the case, what's the point of the mod?
Yeah, then it goes back to being the whole palette swap thing.
In this thread, John MCD says, what if the bonus reflected the qualities of the holy city? If it was unusually productive, make it a production bonus. Unusually scientific, make it a scientific bonus. Hey now, there's an idea.
Yeah, but there's also, as mentioned here, if it's going to reflect off where the city is founded, then I want to be able to pick where it's founded.
Or if you're the one that it changed all the time, when does it determine which bonus you're going to get? And is it going to stay that way? Is it going to change every few turns?
Unimatrix 11 had said, as a proposal, I shift the uniqueness to the monasteries instead and leave the temples as is. Well, if you did that and then you left monasteries as they were, then at some point these benefits would go away. Overall, I like John MCD's suggestion, which will get what Sovereign is getting at with some kind of uniqueness element without the whole... Well, I shouldn't say not without controversy, but without...
That the whole user get it money?
Yeah, exactly. Because even if we put it on random, it'd be like, yeah, I played random. I played the game 6 times with it on random and 5 times Juice had +1 gold. Yeah, can just see that.
Yeah.
Newly conquered areas, do you rework tiles? By Kelvarnson over at CFC. He asked, basically, do you send in your army of workers to rebuild and rework the conquered cities? Is the IA useless as city building, unable to create commerce or production cities? I always do that. The AI never creates a city the way I want it to, or works the tiles the way I would like to have them. I would kind of find it odd anybody who didn't.
Falling right behind my stacks of doom, my little stack of engineers. It's like, no, don't put a road there, put a railroad. And that should be farm, and that should be a cottage. What were you thinking?
Yeah. Is there anyone on this topic that says, no, I love the way they make their cities?
Sion says, really, it depends. If it's not that bad, I might overwork a few tiles, but it really depends on how they do it.
As the Mean Team puts it, you should find some way to optimize the cities you took. Otherwise, why take them?
Yeah.
Insino says, well, really useless cities can still be useful as a base of operation, i.e. to launch bombers from. Okay, there can be exceptions, but as a general rule.
I don't really keep cities just for that purpose. If it's useless, I'm not going to keep it just so I can use it for bombers or something. I'll just take some other town that is actually useful and can use bombers.
For me, it'll depend on the operational range. If I want to be able to get into an enemy's territory with my bombers, and I'm going to need that less than desirable city in terms of production or whatnot, then of course maybe we'll have another city build the bombers or fighters or whatever, bring them over, and then use them as a base of launching. But that's pretty situational.
If you're trying to run to a conquest victory, you might just be sweeping through the territory and not really care.
Yeah, if you're a long way ahead. If you have a domination of conquest, if you're that far ahead, you'll just go through and just burn everything. Because it's faster and easier.
Always frustrating in that heat of the moment. Like, would you like to keep this city? Yes. Oh, wait, I meant... Ah. Reload.
Heraclitus created a thread called Financial Crisis, where he discusses whether or not there should be, I'm assuming it's an event...
Yeah.
That takes into place, like, real-life financial crisis, like the current markets, Great Depression, items like that. Myself, personally, I say no.
No.
It's a game. I really don't want real-world topics in the game like this.
The only financial crisis I want in the game is not having enough money to support my army.
Yeah, most of us will create our own financial crisis in the game.
Without any help from the AI.
It's like, crap, I took too many cities.
Oh, really?
I actually like the idea of the financial crisis, but not as Heraclitus suggests it. I like Theban's suggestion in the thread, which is, should be more like the opposite of a golden age, where cities affected lose -1 hammer, -1 gold per tile that generate 3 or more for 10 turns times game speed.
That could be interesting. It's temporary. It's not going to be huge long bits, depending on your game speed, of course.
Indeed.
And if it could also happen to the AI and slow down a juggernaut, that would be nice.
That would be nice. since Golden Age is already implemented, this is the opposite of. It's still a random event, but it's not that big of something new, something to deal with. It's either not too ridiculous or so minimal that it's kind of like, what, that happened? I missed that. There is actually, in the events, I've never actually seen this event, but Event 54, Great Depression, where the prerequisite is that there's at least one corporation founded somewhere. Active weight, 40 out of 100. The result? All players lose 25% of their gold.
Ouch.
Well, at least it's all players.
Yeah, really, but still.
I've never seen that event. You say that's a current event?
John C. Nunn says that, I thought I saw a Great Depression event in the random event XML. It might be one of those that turned off via 0% chance of happening, but JB quoted from the random event list and says that, no, the active weight is 40 out of 100, so I guess you've just been lucky.
Hmm. Or your playing was being turned off.
We don't like to talk about those people, man.
Yep. Event 54, Great Depression. Well, it does exist.
I'm telling you, you know, people want some weird random events, like catastrophic ones. Sid Sushi has bad fish, half your population dies, you know, like.
That would have been.
Heraclitus' suggestion is that, you know, the effect should be downgrading of many towns to villages or even hamlets, and a few banks should have a chance of disappearing. Wall Street City would riot, and then the player would have this choice between a civic change, a large bailout, a small economic aid package, and let the market handle it where riots continue, for instance. But that this is an event of the worst kind. There would be smaller negative events similar in nature and smaller positive events that would represent times of prosperity where, for instance, say, your hamlet turned into a village.
I think he should wait for a mod.
I like the idea that he's thinking that there can be the flip side, the positive side of this. It's still being a random event, yes, but it being the opposite of the Golden Age that Steven suggests.
Mundungu? How the hell do you say that?
I thought you had it right.
Did I?
If he doesn't like it, he'll write us a letter of complaint.
Mundungu asked about workers in place for a loan. Basically, his question is, do you stack workers or do you have them work individually? My own preference is based on what the time period is. Early part of the game, I usually keep them separate. But once it gets to the point where you have tons of workers and nothing for them to do, then I'll stack them like crazy just because I've got nothing else to do with them.
Yeah.
It's occasionally I'll stack them up, like maybe two or three combined, once I start getting quite a few of them. But early, I always keep them separate.
Yeah, I tend to try to keep them separate. Because if a bunch of them are together, they'll start talking and not doing work and stuff, you know.
Well, early on I'll pair up a couple to get all the cities connected together, but everybody else is usually on their own. But during the medieval period, I usually have them in pairs, because even though it's not collectively actually faster, you're just getting it done sooner, but it's still taking the same amount of work to do it.
Yeah.
But connecting your iron back a little faster can help.
True, or yeah, if it's some resource, or sometimes I like to use pairs if it's like doing the railroad.
I always move them individually, otherwise I end up being sloppy and just, you got bunches of workers there and I'm not doing anything. So I find it better to do it that way.
Indeed, early on in the game, I have one or even two workers working together to build roads, as Mackie was saying, to connect cities together. But otherwise, earlier on in the game, I have workers, but I just need or want one per city that's improving it. So all of the cities are more or less improving at the same speed. As soon as I'm looking to found a city, for instance, I often take a worker there, so it's more or less starting when the city is about to be founded. And even sometimes, if time allows, I'll even have a worker go into an area, and I haven't founded the city quite just yet. For instance, maintenance. Oh, I can't have that city right now, but I'd like to, and I get them to connect resources, if possible, if it's already within my cultural border, or at least have the road ready to go so I can get access to the resource that much more quickly. But then later on, indeed for railroads, having them in pairs or sometimes in threes in order to finish the last few tiles that need railroads. They can also be useful in groups. For instance, if you have, a random event that wipes out your farm thanks to a tsunami or something like that, having them grouped together, and then they can be dispatched to fix that as soon as possible. Yeah, I guess the short answer is early on, individually, and then later on, as particularly you get into railroads, you start grouping them together in twos or threes.
Even in the late game, I'll still move them all individually. they may be moving around in packs, but I never actually group them together. Even if you're doing, like, the quick build of a mine or a lumber mill, I've still moved more individually. Otherwise, I always end up with one or two that sort of miss a turn. And, yeah, I just like to make sure it's all done as quickly as possible. Micromanaging, I know.
I was about to say, is micromanagement good for you, Matt?
Yeah, it is. I do it every day at work, so I might as well do it while I'm a guy.
In part with that question, Gen V, brackets FP, also brings up the question on how many workers per city. He does 1.5 workers per city as a rule is what he does. Myself, I prefer at least two.
1.5 workers, huh? What's half a worker supposed to do? I mean, really, that's got to hurt. Is that a mod? That'd be neat.
It's like 2.5 kids.
Who's two of the other half a kid?
Depends on which half it is.
I also think it can be beneficial early on in the game when you are connecting cities with your workers. If you have a lot of forest and jungle terrain to connect between your cities, having that chopped as soon as possible to improve not only the speed of your military units, but can also improve the speed of other workers and subsequent workers to those that are clearing the forest and the jungle, for instance, can get to another city more quickly. Because if I'm founding a city, it's like, okay, I founded the city. What should it be building? A worker? No, I'll have another city nearby build a worker. And if there's terrain obstacles such as that in the way, if that's been cleared, then they can get to that city all the more quickly and start working on it.
That's one nice thing about the chopping the forest is you always have to make sure that you have enough workers to all be able to do that final chop on all those forests you pre-chopped. So that way you can finish that wonder in that one or two turns. Always hate when you pre-chop and you don't have enough workers to hit them all at once. Or does nobody else do that?
It's micromanagement. I hate micromanagement. This is why I only play at the lower levels.
I like the environment. I don't know about all this chopping.
Hug that tree.
That's right.
The other big factor in how many workers you have depends how many you manage to liberate.
Worker steals.
Airy is that worker management is only a part of micromanagement. Every black horse is a horse, but not all horses are black. Well, when you put it that way.
Racist.
What?
This is the Vault segment, with topics cut from earlier episodes, but have found relevance again later.
The Rev gameplay experience.
Who else owns it on here?
I have it.
I don't have a console to play it, so I don't have it.
I played like 5 minutes of it.
Did you like it? I mean, do you think there's room for it in the universe, Annalie?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I'm using it as a gateway drug for my younger brothers. Yeah.
Hook 'em on Civ, Rev. Hook 'em on Civ.
I find chess is a good gateway drug, too.
Only if they're already nerds.
Do you have the 360 version or the PS3 or the DS or what you got?
I've got DS, so it's not as totally cool as the other ones, but it's still fun.
Let me ask you something from the get-go. Do you find losing the Civilopedia to be kind of painful?
No.
No, really?
No, because I played Civ so much that I know a lot of the stuff anyway. I don't refer back to it anymore, usually, in my games, and so I just flew right into Civ Rev.
Yeah.
It was like I'd always been playing it. A little bit different, but really easy to figure out.
Yeah, and you don't find the transition from the larger Civilopedia down to the a little bit tighter but a lot more powerful properties that many items have in the universe. You don't miss having the Civilopedia to have to refer back to that.
Well, I don't care. And plus, Jason Bergman, he said that they were thinking about putting it online in our previous interview with him. So I don't think we'll be forever without it.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. I have the 360 version and the DS version. Because I'm so entrenched within the PC version, it was actually kind of difficult to me to transition, expecting your city cross to grow at a specific time versus having to buy a unit to do it or having to buy a building to have the city cross expand. That was odd. It's a hard gear shift for me.
Well, it's definitely different, but you can do different things too. Like, I can build just one warrior and take one warrior to three barbarian cities and conquer.
Yeah, Absolutely. And if you have the Aztecs heal themselves after every battle, the crazy powers are a lot of fun. And it makes you think, well, what if they added these powers to the PC game proper and the sheer amount of unbalancing that would happen?
It would just be way too powerful. Because there are certain things when I was like, whoa, this unit is way more powerful than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it works overall because the game balance is so different in the Rev.
I read on a forum, and I kind of agree with it after I thought about it, that it was like playing chess without pawns.
Hmm.
That you have just nothing but attack, attack, attack. And it's really true.
Yeah.
Do you like the fact that it turned to that attack, defense, movement rating system for units, or do you miss the Civ 4 single attack and defense number?
I don't know. I appreciate both systems for their variety in gameplay.
I popped a tank out of a artifact last night, and I think I was going against some Legion units, and of course the Legion units destroyed the tank. So, we're back to that again. Yeah, it was like 1650, and I was a German, so I...
That's funny.
Yeah, I popped a Panzer, and I attacked a unit outside the city, and of course, I destroyed it, but then here came a Legion army of three units, and it destroyed the tank. So, the old adage of the Spearman versus Tank is back alive and well.
Well, and that's an interesting concept, too, where their whole army is three units. And so, it makes warfare easier.
Yeah, and you tend to have this unstoppable force mentality that, you know, you get your three units together, but then their defense is so low, say, like catapults, you know, you combine them and the defense is three. I know you're supposed to defend your units, but a single unit can destroy your catapults, and then you're just in the ground because you've wasted all those resources trying to pop those catapults.
Yeah. It was definitely a different world for me, because I think the first time I played, I was like, oh, I'm going to go and attack this neighbor, and I'm trying to build a stack, and then I realized... It doesn't matter if I have a stack.
Mm-hmm.
And that was different for me.
Yeah. I found that the DS version was a little lacking. Can't sell units.
Right.
Yeah, in console versions, you could actually sell older units. And if you're not the Germans, that's actually a viable strategy to get a couple bucks here and there. But I have not found a way to sell units yet. And if it's in there, somebody help me.
I don't think it is. I haven't seen it. The DS is definitely a small game compared.
Yeah.
And the graphics remind me of the first Zelda game, but it's okay, and it's okay for what it's made for. The DS has its limitations for sure.
I like the strategy also of it just having to get the capital of the enemy civilization as opposed to conquering every single city. It makes the game quicker. It also keeps that civ alive that they can try and reconquer their capital and become a player in the game again. I could see something like that added to the standard Civ series as a quick game option. Instead of having to conquer the entire civilization, you could just go out and try and grab their capital and take them down.
Makes sense.
Have you found it's possible to play as a pacifist at all?
I did try one game. I didn't finish it just because of time. I don't think, well, you'll get attacked a lot if you don't attack them first.
They get jealous of your tech, and you either have to sell that tech or give in to their demands, or they'll just outright declare war.
Yeah, they declare war very quickly.
Just because you're advanced. You can tell that's the stress of the game is to put a battle in there as opposed to do it economically or do it technologically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little disappointed by that because even in my standard Civ 4 games, I'm not a warmonger. I like to build. I like the opening of the game. The end game is my weakest part of Civ 4 because generally everybody's out warring and I'm just trying to build and try and get to space.
Yeah, this game isn't for a builder, I don't think.
No.
No.
I'm glad that Civ 4 at least gives you the option to stay a builder and do your best diplomacy to try and stay within that, where it feels like Civ Rev wants you to war, wants you to attack, wants you to destroy, and with some of the Civs that are in there, it just doesn't make sense to do that.
Yeah, because I remember when we interviewed Jason Bergman on Civ Rev, there was a question about people saying, you know, the AI is far too demanding to deal with, and it's just war, 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 war. Are you going to tweak the AI? And it was, nope. Just happy with it, we're happy with it.
Yeah.
I don't want to come off that I'm disappointed because I enjoy the game. It's like a nice break from a deeper rule set. But I think I want to play a little bit more Civ 4 inside this, and it's just not there.
And as for not being able to find a way to sell units in the DS version, I'm hoping it's just that, I know it sounds strange to say, I hope it's just complicated and then you haven't found it yet. Because all the time we've been told that you've got the same features and the same capabilities as the PS3 and the Xbox 360 version. It's just the look and the lack of the Civilpedia, at least for now.
I like the undertone, Dan's statement.
I hope you're an idiot and you haven't found it yet.
That's, and it's possible.
Well, you know now, Imran, if Joe was an idiot, that would help him fit better on the show.
This is true.
I'm trying to be supportive here.
You could be Dan's buddy.
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
King Flevance on CFC having a thought about whether or not to find a religion should take more than just simply a tech.
This was in response to episode 55, where we had the email from Sal, and Sal had mentioned about the possibility of requiring more than being the first to get to a technology to be able to found a religion. And in listening back to our portion of Sal's letter again and our response, we focused on the culturally linked starts aspect, of course, led back to the gameplay versus realism, and we didn't address the more general suggestion of requiring more than being the first to a technology to found a religion.
Anyone have ideas on how you would be able to find religion in addition to finding some sort of tech?
You just came to the same argument you had with the previous stuff with some religious, different religious benefits. Anything you do, you'd be surprised about it.
Yeah.
The religion is very touchy.
You can make it a random event. After you tech a certain tech, there's going to be a random event where it pops up somewhere or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe based on GP points. Some combination or formula based on great person points and stat tech and...
Like maybe you have to produce a great prophet somewhere to be able to actually found the religion?
Yeah. Like, have to have the tech, but you also have to have the great prophet, and then the great prophet, one of his options is to found whichever religion you have the tech for, if it's not already been founded.
Make it like a corporation.
In some respects.
Yeah. And then you could also choose where your holy city is.
Oh,
yeah,
that's true.
That would be nice.
That's one way to do it. I don't know if necessarily I prefer it to the current way.
That would address some people's concerns, saying that, oh, three or four religions are founded so early on in the game, and they predominate, regardless of whatever it happens to be, because, of course, in Beyond the Sword, you can choose which religion you want. But then if you also have to have not only get the technology, but then, say, get a great prophet, that could allow the religions to be spread out more equally, so then it won't be, oh, my goodness, look at this. I got this religion later on in the game, but hey, so did a couple of other people also founded it late game, rather than it just being, you know, five of the seven religions are founded in the first, I don't know, 100 turns, 150 turns. So they're more evenly spaced out that way, but I'm going to maybe go against the flow here and say I like it just the way it is, that you are able to found a religion when you hit a specific technology. It works for gameplay. I don't see the need to add any more steps to that.
Alrighty.
I kind of like the Great Prophet idea.
Yeah, I do like the Great Prophet idea. That would be kind of neat.
I came up with a good idea. Alright, I'm going to write this down. What day is it?
Hey, I came up with half of it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way if you want to change what it's currently at. I don't think there's really any other good way to do it.
Yeah.
You can't really tie it to, like, a certain type of resource or something like that, because then you might have the problem with religions, as Matt alluded to, which is, why the hell did you give, like, incense for Buddhism, as the guy uses us as an example?
Or it'd be like in old games when you couldn't get iron or horses. I don't, can't get any religions. I don't have any religious resources.
Yeah, religious resources.
I know. It's a, I know.
You know what we could do? We could even take this proposition a couple of steps back and simply look at how do you found a religion? What step do you need? Rather than saying you have to have a technology, what if someone builds a great prophet? Perhaps that should be sufficient enough to be able to found a religion. So then if you said, okay, in order to found a religion, you need to get either one of these technologies on the technology tree.
Mysticism.
Get a great prophet, yeah. Then I'd be okay with that, but not saying you must have a technology and have a great prophet. No, thank you.
We already know the story of Jesus. See, Buddha was extremely rich, gave it all up, and just walked off to learn his own thing. The Muslim guy, what'd he do? He went to
Muhammad.
Mecca for 40 days.
Guy.
Was it Muhammad? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
He went up, not to Mecca, he went up the mountain, Sun Mount. It's like, so it's more the great person idea. It actually sounds a little bit more based off of real life if you're going that route, though most of us don't like that route.
Well, that would work for earlier religions or ones that have a prophet-type figure. But for other things like Confucianism, which seems to be more of a philosophical, I guess, type of religion, then maybe a tech would be more appropriate.
Well, it was handed down by Confucius.
Well, yeah, but he was doing it to teach things, not to... I don't know how to explain that properly.
Confucius says he was a great prophet.
We say he's a prophet, he probably would have said he was just a teacher.
This is a vault segment with topics cut from earlier episodes but have found relevance again later.
I actually played my first game on a donut map. I'd never played on that map type before.
How was that, Dad?
It was a huge map, donut, standard number of civs for that size, noble level, and I quickly realized that it was going to be a rush to be able to expand into the center where there was desert and, of course, oil, which is the only place where oil was located. But you wanted to situate it so that your city could grow well enough, which wasn't too difficult if you located it by rivers, because then you would get floodplains, but then, of course, the rest of the terrain would be desert. And, of course, you're gambling whether or not, okay, is there actually going to be oil? If not within my fat cross, am I going to be able to expand it well enough with my culture? And just as I'm honing in on oil, now I can actually see oil resources. Someone beats me by a couple of turns to found a city, so I just decide, well, my nearby city, I'm going to make it a cultural behemoth as much as I can, and so I'm pumping the culture buildings in there, I switch over to free speech. Eventually, once this game is now progressing past the modern age and into the future age, and so now I don't need my science research as much, so I'm now putting in some of my income into culture. And I end up taking over the oil tile, and in fact, that city ends up revolting to me, which I happily disband. Serves them right. There is only two sources of aluminum on the entire planet, and it just so happens that the one civ that has access to it is a nearby neighbor, and he had adopted my religion early on in the game, which was the predominant religion early on. It eventually got overshadowed by another, and one by one, those that had been my religion converted to that, and so then I ended up converting to it. But because of those early good relations, they were very friendly towards me and were willing to share their one source of aluminum for a very good price. So now I'm the one of two nations out of 16, 17, 18. Nobody's been eliminated yet. And we're the only ones with aluminum. So things are looking up.
Wow. That's cool.
Nice.
Dan's actually winning without the world builder?
Well, in all honesty, we've now gone past the point where score is kept, and Mao actually won a space race victory. Bastard. But I now have the third largest empire on the planet. See, I'm very fortunate to have a number of luxury resources that I'm able to export, and I was able to found civilized jewelers. I've got nearby neighbors that have expanded aluminum, ink in, as well as creative construction, so that's really increased my productivity. It's always nice when you have cities that have 200 hammers available to them a turn.
Well, victory is relative.
Yeah.
That's because Carnamendo plays against her relatives.
Well, I don't know. I've been doing something a little insane, I guess. I downloaded one of those huge, massive Earth maps, and I'm playing it on Marathon as Rome, and I'm trying to win a conquest or a domination victory. It was very brutal to begin with. I think it took me, like, almost 200 turns to research ironworking.
Oh, God.
I had, like, 20 cities and didn't have pottery, and it was pretty brutal, but I got through it. I now own all of Europe, and I'm going to go wipe out Scandinavia pretty quick, and then I got to turn around, wipe out Israel so that I have a land route to Persia, so I can wipe out Persia, and then I'll be the most powerful, well, I already think I'm the most powerful civ in the world, but that'll be twice as more powerful than everyone else. I need to take breaks from it because it's so hard to manage like 50 cities. It's an exercise in self-loathing.
All right, so we'll check back with you in 2010, see how that's going.
See, if we were to translate what you just said to Dan speak, man, it's so hard to manage five cities. I'd take a break.
Comparable Imran speak. I was going to play Civ 4 Beyond the Sword, but the icon on my desktop was at the other end of where my mouse cursor was.
You expect me to click on that?
What I have been playing is a game that is on, oh, I don't know, turn 400 and something, 500 and something. It's long after score was being kept, and my civilization is the only one left on the continent that has not been vassalized or is not the vassal. Fortunately, my military might is the most powerful, at least compared to master or some of the vassals, but if they all combined, which of course would happen in a war, could be bad.
I wouldn't be so shiny.
No, would not.
Anti-shiny.
It's a shame, really, because I had planned on attacking my neighbor, and it's only myself and one other person on the one continent, whereas the other continent is shared by three. Fortunately, the second most powerful nation in the world militaristically, who was on the other continent, he sufficiently attacked my neighbor, and now he's his vassal.
Today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659. That's 441-212-88-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log into the series official website at polycast.apolton.net.
Vote for Polycast in both categories, and that's gaming and best produced, every single day from October 23rd to November 6th, 2008, the 2008 Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com. And so then finally, which Civilization 4 colonization native leader looks the coolest?
I'm going to vote for Akwebana purely on the basis, when you look at the video, when he raises his hand in greeting, it looks like he's saying, live long and prosper.
Woohoo! Oh, no.
There was one person who said something like, I'm going to be brutally honest, but I can't stand Polycast. Well, I've got the remedy for you, sir. Sit down. I mean, what are you just standing for when you're trying to listen to the show? Seriously.
Hey, that's what I used to do. I used to listen to it at work. Walk around while I was work, listen to it.
Wow, that's hardcore.
That's harder core than us.
Where are you at, Imran?
Huh?
Where are you at? What country?
Oh, the U.S.
No.
I'm like, where are you at? I'm sitting at my computer.
Is this a Mackie from Texas?
Yes.
I'm in Georgia.
I was thinking Canadian.
Me?
No.
Hey. That's awesome.
Don't insult Canadians like that, Mathos. What is your problem?
Dan is insulted on behalf of his fellow Canadians.
I think you two are the only single ones. Dan and Imran.
No, I'm single too.
I thought you were married with kids.
I'm old enough, but what?
And Mathos never gets invited again.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of Polycast, episode 56, with our Canadian friend Daniel Quick.
Depends on your definition of great.
And if Dan's your friend, that depends on your definition of friend.
Imran?
What?
Mackie. And Nugog.
Been another great show.
Oh, and me. Mythos. I forgot one. Be right back after the dog's out.
Ooh, that's a dog sound.
I knew that was coming.
Mathos, let the dogs out.
Mathos?
What?
Huh?
Who? What are we doing?
Polycast.
record date?
October 25th, 2008.
Sound clips copyright Civ 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.